as a career is fraught with occupational hazards, most notably violence, which in extreme cases can cause death. So when a father learns his wayward son has gone missing, he hopes for the best, but suspects the worst. And when the police can't find him, the father enlists the help of not one, but two psychics.
Now I got a sense right away that he was gone.
You're not looking for a living human being anymore. You're looking for a body, and a body can be anywhere.
But can anyone be absolutely certain, the police or the psychics, if the missing man is dead or alive? In 1994, Lawrence Embro was a businessman.
He was, for all intents and purposes, an upstanding citizen, a member of the community. He had a fiance. His fiance and he had were to be married in 3 or 4 weeks. So he had all the characteristics of a normal citizen.
Normal, except his business was dealing drugs. And apart from having a street name, Shaba, Lawrence Embro wasn't your stereotypical supplier.
The number one anomaly in this whole situation was that it didn't appear as though he actually used drugs or had any involvement in drugs. His lifestyle didn't depict that. His family relationships didn't depict that. It appeared as though his involvement was just that of business.
Apparently, Embro's plan was to make enough money to retire from the drug business, go straight, and start a new life with his fiancée in Dallas. But the best laid plans of mice and men.
Oklahoma City, 911. Okay, and what's your name, ma'am? If you could just calm down, we've got officers on their way to help you out. If you see anybody else, then call us back and let us know anything.
Breaking into her home. The woman was Lawrence Embro's mother-in-law-to-be.
There were 3 people in the residence when the incident occurred. There was a woman, she's about 45 years old, and there were 2 children, 9.5 or 10 years old, where the door burst open, and these 2 individuals, both of them with weapons, immediately began striking her, forcing her to the ground, covering her face, loud abusive threats, threatening to kill her, dragging her and telling her, you know, don't look at me, don't look at me, forcing her to the back of the residence where the children were found. At the same time, we're asking, you know, where's Shaba's money? Where's Shaba keep his property, his stuff? Of course, they were dumbfounded by the request. They didn't know what to think. And of course, the kids were terrified, and the mother or the woman was cooperative. They all were. As this continued, for whatever reason, and it appears to be just an opportunistic thing, one of the suspects took the woman to a different room and continued searching, and then at one point sexually assaulted her.
Apart from $40 taken from a piggy bank, the assailants leave empty-handed. When Evans interviews the victims, it becomes apparent that the men were looking for Lawrence Embro, but Embro is nowhere to be found. The fact that he doesn't return phone calls immediately raises suspicion.
Had it not been for the fact that the home invasion also included reference to him, there would have been some resistance to taking that kind of complaint or that kind of concern seriously. But given the fact that there was a reference made to him during the home invasion, and that coincided exactly with the time that you know we lost or they lost contact with him, it was obvious that they were related.
But in this case, because of the timing of Embro's sudden disappearance and the ransacking of his mother-in-law's home, Evans felt that there was an obvious connection. He called Embro's father and advised him to file a missing persons report with the Midwest City Police Department, the jurisdiction where Embro lived. Now there are 2 official police investigations. While Dan Evans of the Oklahoma City Police Department handles the home invasion, the missing persons case is assigned to Midwest City Detective Pam Gray. One of the first solid leads is the discovery of Embro's car, clean as the day it rolled off the assembly line.
A normal car is going to have prints, unless somebody didn't want prints there. In which case, That's a red flag. Everything indicated to me something had happened to Lawrence Embrough, that he had been killed.
About a month into the investigation, Detective Gray received a phone call from Lawrence Embrough's father.
He came to accept the fact that his son was probably dead, but he wanted the body. He wanted to be able to bury his son.
The father was so desperate to recover his son's body that he contacted a local psychic and wanted Gray to meet with her.
I said I would be willing to do anything because we kind of reached a stalemate, a standstill as far as the investigation. A lot of people were talking to the detective in Oklahoma City, and their indication to me was they had been advised not to talk to anybody else, including me. Oklahoma City was working one aspect. I was working the missing person on Lawrence Embrough. It's really kind of tough when you run into a stone wall.
Gray, who'd never worked with a psychic before, was in for a rude awakening from her colleagues.
Well, there was a lot of laughter. And I would constantly hear, there was no reason for any comments to be made because they would all be humming the theme song to the Twilight Zone. Way out there, Earth calling Sky King, you know. Just rude comments, but you get used to it.
Unperturbed, Detective Gray went and met with psychic Nita Lee.
When I went to the appointment with Nita Lee, her first response to me was, he's dead. I felt at that point that he was dead.
I said, there's three guys that did it, and one of them seemed to be smaller than the other two.
Gray was really hoping for Nita to pinpoint a location.
And I said, he's northeast of Oklahoma City. There's an old tin barn where he is. I said, he can hear the train as it goes by. So see, his spirit was very much there with him.
A train, an old tin barn, and northeast of the city, not exactly GPS accuracy.
We're talking a lot of farmland, a lot of pasture land, a lot of ranches. The scope that Nita Lee gave me would have been impossible to walk it.
But Nita did give one other clue. She said the body was not buried. If this was true, it was, in practical terms, a plus.
We would probably have a better chance of locating the body than if it was buried. Because if it was closer to town, somebody would start smelling it. If it's out in the field, that possibility isn't going to exist, but hopefully somebody who owns some land or wherever would come across the body.
Psychic Nita Lee was able to at least narrow down the search area to the northeast of Oklahoma City. Will a second psychic's clues lead Detective Pam Gray to the exact location and bring a sense of closure to Lawrence Embrough's grief-stricken family? August 1994. It's been 3 months since Lawrence Embrough went missing. When psychic Nita Lee's predictions don't locate what everyone assumes to be a missing body, the father brings in another psychic, Dr. Sally Heading.
My rule is that if I'm going to take a crime case, I have to work with the law enforcement agency. Sometimes, number one, it's for my protection, and number two, sometimes there are things that I don't think the family needs to know. They're already in pain.
Sally never demands payment for her services, and with good reason.
Because you're not going to always see everything. You're not going to be able to read everyone or pick up on everything. And so if you have that kind of pressure on you, wouldn't there be the fear that you'd start making up shenanigans? You know, well, I really need that money and the mortgage overdue, so maybe this time I'll just fudge a little. So when you're not, your livelihood is not contingent on it, then you aren't under that pressure. And you could say, you know what, honey? I can't help you. I don't see a thing around you. It's an absolute blank. Or you can go ahead and do a reading and say, yes, I'm getting this, this, and this. And the same thing for the law work, because all of that is pro bono. I charge nothing. And I tell them my accuracy rate has been tested to be about 80%. If I knew when I was wrong, I would never be wrong. I don't have a clue. Not a clue.
Sally, who doesn't like to travel, works from the comfort of her home in California.
I didn't think right off the bat that he was alive.
It was a confirmation of what I already felt, what Mr. Imbro had come to feel, what Nita Lee had said, and now Sally Heading was saying.
I had this sense, because there was money involved, that it was about selling drugs, and that there was a lot of anger around this money, that it was a deal that had gone wrong.
Once again, Sally and Detective Gray were on the same track.
Well, my thought was he hadn't got out of the drug culture, that either a drug deal had went bad, or he was involved in something else that somebody wanted to get rid of him.
One of the things I saw was a blue blanket. I knew they had not buried him. I saw a blue blanket over him.
In sync with Nita, the man is not buried. The blue blanket, a new and pretty specific clue.
I kept being shown flashing a metal sign that said Herford's on it. And I had the sense of prized Herford's. I also saw a barbed wire fence. I knew there was a gravel road. I could hear it. And I also knew that on the road going north, that there were poles all along the side of the road, telephone poles.
Sally is describing the rural area surrounding Oklahoma City exactly as Nita did.
I got a strong sense that people came up from Los Angeles, the three people, to meet another man. I had the sense that three were African American, and the fourth man was mixed, and that the three men were brought up to do Lawrence Monroe harm.
Now Sally is getting all these visions while sitting in her home in California, half a continent away from the crime scene, and the only connection with Detective Pam Gray is the other end of a telephone line.
Sometimes I'll see like flashes of images. Sometimes I'll feel as if I'm right there going through it, as if that person has walked through me or entered me and I'm walking along with them, or that they're holding my hand and showing me something. And sometimes it's not like hearing voices, it's from within. It's not like someone's whispering in your ear. Sometimes you'll hear a noise that might be connected with a crime scene or something.
I have to confess, I start imitating my fellow detectives going, humming the theme song of Twilight Zone. You know, I've got this phone call and I've got this woman telling me these things. And she's over 1,000 miles away. Yeah, right, you know.
I knew this was a woman who hadn't believed in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy for many, many years. And I think I was on that list, you know, of people to be debunked.
But I tended to believe, or at least have an open mind, because some of what she had told me was consistent with what Nita Lee had told me. But it was strange to me how people 1,500 miles away from each other were consistent in what they were saying.
You know, I really believe that's the exceptional police officer who will set their own belief system aside and do whatever it takes to solve that case. And I think she has that kind of intelligence and insight.
Sally's final prediction was astonishing.
The body's gonna be found by deer hunters. It's going to be happenstance that they come upon this body and there will be two of them.
Unfortunately, the notion of two hunters finding the body doesn't actually define or even narrow down a time frame. In Oklahoma, there's always some unsuspecting creature in season. Deer, duck, crow, rabbit, wild turkey, pheasant, quail, even squirrels are on the hit list. Detective Gray drives the general area northeast of the city, hoping Sally's clues will lead her to the body of Lawrence Embro. But But even she admits it's a long shot.
You would have to have literally millions of people just walking side by side to cover every square inch. It's like the needle in the haystack. Hopefully you will see something, but the possibility of that are slim and none.
Sure enough, the search proves to be a waste of time. All the clues provided by both psychics yield nothing. But what if Sally Hedding came to Oklahoma? Perhaps she could pick up more information from being in the general vicinity of the crime. But there is one small snag.
I really didn't want to fly here. No offense to lovely Oklahoma, but I didn't need to. I read energy. I don't need to be someplace else. Energy is eternal. It's the same every place. I don't have to be right there to pick up on the energy. So I didn't feel I had to fly in. I knew I would not be the one that would, oh, here he is, I got him.
Despite this, she reluctantly makes the journey to Oklahoma City.
I came in for the family. There's nothing anyone can do that feels like enough. And so that was the energy that brought me here, to help the family. Did I feel that they were being any difference? No.
Pam Gray, the detective charged with finding the missing Embro, is out of town the day Sally arrives. Detective Larry Beaver, who has never worked with a psychic before, is assigned to escort Sally around the city.
I was a little bit apprehensive, to say the least, but I was a little excited also, having an opportunity to work with someone outside the field of law enforcement. Seemed like it was going to be, like I said, exciting to me.
I said, you know, once we get into Midwest City, I'll take over. I'll just tell you where to go, you know. Fortunately, we didn't end up in Cucamonga.
Beaver takes Sally to a known crack house on the outskirts of the city. The rumor on the street was that this is where Embro may have met his end. 2 years before Embro went missing, a mass murder occurred. Five women were stripped and stabbed to death. Sally picks up on the bad vibrations.
Wow.
Can't imagine everything that's happened here.
A lot of bad things. A lot of bad things.
Well, let's try to find out who owns this property so we can get on it and take a look at it.
For the first time, she got a sense that Lawrence Embro was executed.
I had the sense of him going to there were stairs. I'm not sure now if it was upstairs or downstairs. But going into a building, he walked in, there are other men in there. Some of them he didn't know. There was the energy of hostility. He was anxious. I could feel that sense of anxiety, discomfort. You know, I don't want to be here. Like you're, God, I'm outnumbered. Then I had the sense of gray around his face or neck. I wasn't sure if it was duct tape or if it was rope. I wasn't sure if they put him in a trunk or a back seat. I knew that they had not driven more than 20 minutes.
The cop and the psychic continued to search the area, keeping roughly within a 20-minute radius from the city. For Sally, the sense of being in the right place is almost tangible.
Now, ever since we pulled up here, I've had an overwhelming sense of deja vu. And my definition of deja vu is that you're on path, you're right where you're supposed to be, doing what you're supposed to be doing, that everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be, and that's the feeling I have right now.
With everything.
As Sally had predicted, the visit to Oklahoma didn't produce a body.
Well, when we wrapped things up at the last location, I felt a little skeptical at that at the time, not knowing Sally very well and not knowing what to expect. Okay, fine, yes, we didn't find the body, but we found all these signs and symbols and things that you had predicted we would find. And you're telling me now that you believe that, you know, when hunting season starts, that the body will be found. I will just leave it at faith and see what happens. You
looked
at
what Sally had done to move the case forward was to narrow down the area where she thought the body might be found.
One person says something, you can kind of blow it off. Two people say something, and where there were consistencies with what Sally Hedding and Nita Lee, the prior psychic, had said, I was beginning to believe.
Detective Pam Gray's newfound faith drove her to action.
I contacted Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, and two deputies went out and rode this 450 acres of the land near where she had indicated his body was nearby.
The deputies find nothing. It's 30 days since psychic Sally Heading was wandering around these parts. It's also the last day of quail hunting season. The unsuspecting hunters make a horrifying discovery. It turns out to be the remains of Lawrence Embro, exactly as psychic Sally Heading predicted.
The body's gonna be found by deer hunters. And I said, he's northeast of Oklahoma City, I think.
One of the things I saw was a blue blanket.
I knew they had no tin barn where he is. And it has bright
flashing a metal sign that said perforates.
I said, he can hear the train as it goes by. And he could.
I also saw a barbed wire fence. I knew there was a gravel road. I could hear it.
Every single clue provided by both psychics, Sally Heading and Nita Lee, turned out to be right on target. All the indicators were in the vicinity of where the body was found. Detective Pam Gray was blown away.
There wasn't any more teasing. There wasn't any more humming of the Twilight Zone. However, nobody wanted to come right out and say, hey, psychics are great, psychics are wonderful, you know, this is the answer.
With the discovery of Embro's body, police were now dealing with a homicide. After an exhaustive investigation, detectives were able to piece together what had happened.
The story was Mr. Embro gave approximately somewhere between $20,000 and $60,000 to an associate of his to go to California to pick up a load of cocaine. He reportedly bought a Lexus, went out to clubs, frequented ladies or women, and squandered all the money. To most dope dealers, they have to, or they're going to demand respect, because if they don't have it, they're not going to be able to do their work. If you don't respect them, you're not going to pay them. And a lot of dope dealers will front you dope. In other words, they'll give you the dope without the money on your word that you're going to pay them back. They only do that if they know you or if they respect you as someone in the business. If you don't have any respect on the street, whether you're a dope dealer, you're a cop, you're a doctor, or whatever, you're not going to get very far. There's no honor among thieves, but they do value respect very highly. They don't always earn it, but they value it.
The gentleman with the new Lexus was Steve Gray. Embro, who naturally wanted his money back, put the squeeze on Gray. Gray called his gang member friends in LA, including a man by the name of Isaac Johnson. According to Johnson, Gray wanted Embro off his case to do what it takes to scare him into backing off. As payment, they keep whatever money they find. However, before they get a chance to confront him, Embro makes a surprise visit to Steve Gray's girlfriend's apartment. Little does he know, the gang from L.A. are inside.
Lawrence comes to the door, opens up his jacket, shows his gun, says he wants his money, or he wants him. So Steve invites him inside, says, I've got some money, let me pay you something, I'll get you the rest later. As soon as he walks in the door, Isaac Johnson tells us that he punches him in the face, and Lawrence Embro goes down. They then commence to beating him with their weapons and with their hands and feet until they subdue him.
Lawrence Embro died from his wounds. The gang wrapped his head with duct tape, placed him in a blanket, and dumped him on the outskirts of town. The duct tape was exactly as psychic Sally Heading described. The blanket, down to the color blue, was exactly as she described. Even Sally can't fully explain it.
I wish I could tell you how I know these things. How did I know it was a blue blanket? You know, I mean, there are a lot of colors to pick from there. Is it a lucky guess? Do you know there are times I've really wondered that seriously? could these be lucky guesses? Am I just doing, you know, randomly da-da-da-da-da? But it comes so quickly and so strongly, I don't believe so. The only way that I can come up with an explanation is that Lawrence was showing me where he was.
All the gang members were charged and found guilty in the murder of Lawrence Embro. Lawrence Embro was 29 when he was murdered. He had planned on going straight, getting married, and moving to Dallas. Unlike many in his trade, he wasn't a drug user. Apparently, he was simply tempted by the lure of making a quick buck, a temptation that cost him his life.